of its adaptogenic qualities, bota was in even more demand than spice in some corners of the galaxy. Its potential value was so great, in fact, that its use as a medication by the Rimsus here on Drongar had been strictly interdicted. A rich bit of irony, that. But transporting bota, even at hyperlight speeds, was difficult because of its extremely limited shelf life. And that was where Philba had outdone himself. The Hutt had discovered a way to ferry the contraband across the galaxy without loss of quality. Bota's decay process stopped if it was embedded in blocks of carbonite. Preserved this way, it could be shipped anywhere, if the blockades of both sides could be dodged. That was where Black Sun had initially come in. Philba had connections to the Interstellar Criminal Organization, and they had struck a bargain. For a percentage, Black Sun would provide a YT-1300F freighter with a modified hyperdrive that could slip past both Republic and Confed blockades and smuggle blocks of carbonite carrying bota to the far corners of the galaxy. But it was now apparent that Black Sun was not satisfied with just a cut of the illegal profits they were making. They wanted the Nexu's share. Blade stopped pacing as a new thought struck him. Was Philba double-crossing him? It was no secret that the Hutt wanted to be a Vigo. And what better way to ingratiate himself with the crime cartel than opening the way for Black Sun to take over a profitable smuggling operation? Blade nodded. Yes. He had to consider that possibility. The call had come much sooner than even Blade had anticipated. In fact, it had come in person. Seated across the desk from Blade, Black Sun's representative was more than simply self-confident. He was obnoxiously smug. In addition to that, Mothel, as he called himself, was large and very muscular, with a blaster strapped low on his right leg and a vibroblade sheathed on his left hip. And he looks like he knows how to use them, Blade thought. Good. Mothel had just delivered Black Sun's offer. It was more like an ultimatum. They didn't want more bota. They wanted it all.
So, the deal is, you up your production and shipments. We set up a big transport outside sensor range. You ferry the stuff up. Fill the hold. We pay you in space. Everybody makes massive creds. Everybody gets happy.
Blade wanted to laugh. Right. And my face goes on every criminal wanted holocast from here to Coruscant, while you remain anonymous. There's a deal. Even if Black Sun let him live after the transaction, and he wasn't betting his Yithryl on that, even if he came out of it with a fortune, it wouldn't be enough to make life on the run worth it. No, thank you. But to Mothel, he said, all right, it might take a little while to arrange it. The man smiled, showing his puny teeth.
We can have a transport here in, say, a local half month. Should be plenty of time, don't you think?
Blade smiled in return. Observe my fangs, human.
Yes, yes. Oh, one other thing. I have a small but particularly good batch of bota cast in carbonite, extremely high-grade product. I would like to send it to your Vigo as a gesture of goodwill.
High-grade, eh?
How much? Not much. Blade shrugged self-deprecatingly. 5 kilos or so.
Excellent, the human said.
My Vigo will be pleased.
And I am pleased to hear it.
Blade stood.
I've had to hide it, of course. Would you care to accompany me? It's on the quarantine deck.
Martha looked uncertain.
Quarantine? As in contagious disease?
No, nothing like that. Anything that comes up from the planet has to be sterilized, irradiated, purely as a safety precaution. Drongar, as I'm sure you know, is a positive sump of exotic pathogens. The deck is clean now, and I'm keeping it off limits to make sure nobody happens across some items I don't want noticed, such as the one I have for you.
It was a little thing that did it. It often was a little thing. In this case, it was a female human lab tech laughing at something the guy sitting at the next table had said. It wasn't loud, but it was a happy sound. The sound of someone forgetting for a blessed moment the grim realities of the Rimsu. All of a moment, Joss remembered a girl from primary school. The first one he had made laugh. Joss sighed. If not for this war, he would probably be at home, starting a practice with his father, or perhaps one of his aunts or uncles. There were a lot of doctors in his family, and several surgeons. And maybe, after a hard day in the operating theater, going home to his impressive Connaught in the swank Golden Beach area of Coronet. His spouse would meet him at the door, a bright, funny, sexy female companion with whom he could share his life and love. Maybe even children. Abruptly, the food on his table held no appeal. Joss thought of Barriss Offee, of the attraction he had initially felt for her. It was just as well that it hadn't continued, he told himself, since she was not Permies. The fact that she was off-limits, however, did nothing to assuage his loneliness. He wanted someone for a life mate, someone to be close to cherish. But he would have to wait until he was back in his home system for that to happen. He stared moodily into the depths of his tonk tea. Stare any harder, and it'll evaporate. He glanced up and saw Talk standing there, in her off-duty whites. The light from the chow hall door was behind her, putting her in partial silhouette, but not so much that he couldn't still see her features. Everything went out of his head except for one thought. Son of an ibbot. She's gorgeous. It wasn't as if he hadn't been aware that his chief nurse was human, and quite attractive. That was obvious to anybody with one working eye. But the same problem that existed with the Padawan also applied to Tulk. She was not Permies. The Vondars and the Cursos, his father's and mother's clans, were very solidly Enster. Disciples of a long and traditional socio-political affiliation in which Joss had also been raised. A big part of an Enster's core belief system was that no marriage could be made, much less consummated, outside the inhabitants of one's own planetary system. No exceptions were made. All this flickered through his thoughts at light speed. He hoped none of it showed, given Alordean's uncanny ability to read expressions and body language. Talk, he said casually. Sit. Have some tea. In fact, have mine. Tulk sat, took his cup and sipped from it, looked at him closely, and said, Who died? About half the troops in the Republic military forces, seems like lately. We're keeping 87% of those who rotate through our surgery alive. What's really wrong, Joss? It took no imagination at all to picture her on his cot, with her hair spread out on the pillow. And that was a bad lane to be spacing down, he quickly realized. So instead of speaking the truth, he said, Just tired. Biorhythms are off. I need a vacation. Don't we all? But she gave him a look, and for just a second, he was certain she knew exactly what he was thinking. Exactly. Joss and Zan watched as the supply dropship lowered on invisible repulsor waves. They'd better have those biomarkers, Zan said. I only ordered them half a standard year ago. The ramp lowered. Philba, of course, was there to inspect the manifest, meticulously checking to see that every last synth flesh strip and chromostring reel was accounted for. The two surgeons, along with several nurses and scrubs, watched the Duraplast containers as they passed, trying to read the photostenciled content lists. Yes, got the biomarkers at last, Zan said with a hiss of satisfaction. Then his tattooed jaw dropped. What? Only one case? They'll be gone in a month. Typical. Joss was also disappointed as the last canister auto-rolled past them. So where are the droids I ordered? He looked at Zan. Did you see any droids come off? Anything that even resembles a droid? Zan glanced over his friend's shoulder.
Before Joss could turn around, he heard a voice say,
"I've been told I resemble one, sir."
He turned and saw a droid standing halfway down the ramp.
Of course, those who said it might only have been trying to be kind.
Joss looked at the droid. It looked like one of the protocol models that were ubiquitous all over the galaxy. If so, it had been refurbished a few times. The power bus cables weren't the standard models, if you remembered correctly. The recharge coupling was different as well. The light pewter armor had more than a few nicks and dents. Joss looked back at Zan.
"I ask for office models," he said. "Anything, even an old CZ model. And they send me a protocol droid."
"I think you'll find me more than competent to assist you, sir. I've had extensive medical programming, including access to the database files of Sector General..."
"What's your ID classification?" Joss interrupted.
"I-5YQ, sir."
Zan frowned. "I've never heard of a 5YQ line."
"A modification of the 3PO series, sir, with certain changes in the cognitive module units. I am usually called I-5.
The man from Black Sun couldn't believe it.
"This is a joke, right? You're tapping my buttons."
Blade said, "Not in the least." He had disarmed Mothel at blaster point, and the man was nearly having a seizure in his disbelief.
"You're insane!"
Mothel's tone was truculent, but his eyes were darting about nervously, and Blade could already smell the man's fear sweat.
"In your position, I might think so too, but I'm afraid it's not that simple. Now listen carefully. The hatch is locked. The code that opens it is here in my belt pocket. If you want to leave this vessel alive, you'll have to collect it from me. There is a large knife in plain sight somewhere on this deck with which you may arm yourself for your attempt."
Mothel glared.
"Yeah? What's to stop me from breaking your neck right now?"
"You could try, even if I didn't have a blaster, but I wouldn't advise it. I am stronger than you, and my heritage is somewhat fiercer."
"When I get back to my Vigo and tell him about this, he's going to have your skull for a drinking cup."
"That may well be," Blade said, "but only if you get past me. I'll give you 2 minutes before I come for you. Next time we see each other, one or both of us dies. You'd best hurry."
The human tucked his bluff and bluster away and took off, fast. In 10 seconds, he was out of sight around the corridor's curve. Blade gave him the rest of the allotted time, enjoying the slight lingering sour odor of the man's sweat, then started down the corridor opposite the direction Mothel had taken. The weapon was closer this way, and there were several places wherein he could hide to watch it and wait. He would allow the man to collect the knife. That was only fair, since a Sakaian's muscles and ligament attachment angles were mechanically superior to those of a human's, making Blade at least half again as powerful as a strong man, and a good deal quicker as well. Blade reached the knife a few minutes before Mothel could possibly circle around the length of the torus. There were 3 places that afforded a good view. One was at deck level, 3 steps away in a shadowed corner. The second was behind a massive heating cooling coil across the corridor, at least 12 steps away. The 3rd hiding spot was inside a ventilation shaft almost directly over the weapon's location, and while 2 body lengths in distance, it was a straight drop. Blade gathered himself, squatted low, and sprang. He caught the edge of the ventilation shaft, pivoted aside the grate covering it with 1 hand while clinging to the edge, and pulled himself into the shaft feet first. He turned around, rotated the grate back into place. Supporting himself by the strength of his arms upside down in the narrow shaft, he began to breathe slowly and evenly, dropping his heart rate into hunting mode. A tense hunter could not move fast. He did not have long to wait. Mothel arrived in the vicinity of the knife. He looked around warily, then snatched the blade up. Blade heard him sigh in relief, and his grin became wider. Blade took a final breath, pivoted the grate cover aside, and dived for the man head first. He screamed the blood cry of his pride.
"Tarnese!"
Mothel looked up, terror on his face. Too late, he raised the knife. Blade brushed it aside and reached for the man's throat. Then they were joined.
Want to see something interesting? Durr asked. Joss, Zan, Tulk, and Barriss were in the cantina, all drinking some form of alcohol except the Jedi.
Have a seat, Joss said.
Durr sat and pulled a small device from his pocket, a stressed plastoid and metal sphere about the size of a human child's fist. He held it up.
Joss squinted at it. Can't say I'm overly enthralled, he said.
Wait.
He took another drink, set the mug down, and squinted at the device again.
Nope, he said. Still not enthralled.
Looks like a spice ball, Zan said. That would be interesting.
Joss raised his mug in silent agreement. Barriss said, it's from a cam droid. Military grade, looks like.
Give the Jedi first prize, Durr said.
He set the sphere on the table and activated it. The holoprod rezzed up from the sphere, 1/6 life-sized. There were some broad-leaved trees, a lot of burned-out or blown-up droids, and a few clone troopers lying about. Everything was canted at an odd low angle, as if recorded from a few centimeters above the ground. After a moment, a trio of humans appeared, working their way through the downed machines and bodies. They wore black and purple thin skins and jump boots, with slug-thrower carbines slung over their shoulders.
Those are Silesian mercenaries, Barriss said.
The three mercenaries were scavenging, picking up tools and weapons from the battle site and checking the clone bodies.
There was no sound, and the image occasionally wavered a bit, breaking into digital blocks and then steadying again.
Droid was on its last power reserves, Durr said.
Suddenly, the three Silesians froze. They dropped their weapons and raised their hands, then backed away from their fallen armaments. A moment later, a man walked into the cam's frame, a blaster rifle held on the trio. Joss looked at the human. The odd angle made recognition difficult, but still he felt he knew this guy.
Foe Jai, Barriss said.
As they watched, Jai smiled, then threw his gun to the ground.
What's he think he's doing? Zan said.
Tulk was watching the hollow closely.
He knows what he's doing, she said.
The hollow flickered again as Jai moved in and the three Silesians went for him. A moment later, all three mercenaries were on the ground, and darned if Joss could tell what had happened.
Durr said, let's look at the replay on that.
He touched a control on the sphere. Everyone sat up and watched carefully as the scene began again at 1/4 speed. Even slowed down, it wasn't easy to see exactly what Fojai did. But Joss knew enough anatomy to recognize what damage had been inflicted as the three mercenaries fell. One had a crushed larynx, one a broken neck, and the third had taken an elbow to the temple that had surely cracked the skull. Fojai went to each in turn, squatted next to the body, and appeared to take something. The image froze as he squatted next to the last one.
Not sure what he was doing at the end, Durr said, but I'd guess he was taking some kind of trophies. Separatist troops use sub-Q implants for ID, so it's probably pieces of clothing or something.
Barriss would not have sought out a confrontation with Fojai. Jedi were trained to deal with conflict, not to go looking for it when there was no compelling reason to do so. But the next morning, as she had gone out into the dawn's relatively cool light to do some stretching exercises, the Bundaki fighter had swaggered into view and stopped to watch.
Up early, eh, Jedi?
She didn't bother to reply to the obvious comment, but instead continued her exercises. I wasn't aware that the Jedi took vows of stillness, he said. His voice was clipped now, and there was an edge of steel underlying it.
She stood and extended her hand straight over her head. "We don't," she said, bending to put her hands flat on the ground, keeping her legs straight. "We talk when we have something to say, not simply to hear our own voices." "You're angry." "I thought Jedi kept their emotions under control." Jai smiled. "Something I said?" His tone was taunting. Barriss turned to look directly at him. "No, something you did. You murdered 3 mercenaries." If that surprised Jai, his face didn't show it. "And what makes you think so?" "Someone recovered a crippled camdroid. It was all recorded." "Really? I'd like to see that." "It doesn't bother you at all, does it?" "What? That you beat 3 people to death?" He looked surprised. "Is that how you see it? Is there another way to see it?" Jai smiled and spread his hands in a gesture of innocence. "I was unarmed, 1 against 3, on a battlefield in a war, my dear Padawan. I was but utilizing the skills that I am paid to utilize. I'm a soldier. It is not considered murder to kill the enemy." Barriss stood, arms folded against her chest, looking at the Bundaki master. "You're an expert fighter, and your hands and feet are as much weapons as a vibroblade or a stun baton. Those men had no more chance than they would have had you used a blaster on them. Pretending otherwise is disingenuous." "Are you calling me a liar, Jedi?" She faced him squarely. "Yes." He smiled again, a cruel, triumphant smile. "Such an accusation presupposes the willingness to back it up. Would you care to demonstrate the efficacy of your mystical force against my expertise?" With the greatest of difficulty, Barriss held her anger in check and kept her mouth shut. After a moment, he laughed. "That's what I thought. I beat one of your Jedi Knights in a hand-to-hand match, and it wouldn't really be fair for me to pick on a lowly Padawan now, would it? Enjoy your exercise, Jedi." He turned contemptuously and started to walk away. Barriss couldn't stop herself. She raised her hand, concentrated, and closed her open fingers into a fist. As Jai took another step, time seemed to slow for Barriss. Jai's left foot came forward, and as it approached his right, his boot twisted inward, no more than a few degrees, just enough to catch the heel of his forward boot. He tripped. Jai, tucked into an ovoid shape, one arm curving, hand turned inward slightly, so that his motion looked like a deliberate action. He dived, rolled on his arm, shoulder and back, coming up and turning slightly, a neat gymnastic move that left him standing in balance and facing her. "Careful," she said. "The ground is slippery from the heavy dew." Dender had seen a number of odd sights in his years on interstellar assignments. To the best of his memory, however, he had never seen a droid sitting alone in a cantina. Lemeth, the Duros amphibian specialist, was seated in a far corner nursing a mug of Fromish ale. 2 clone sergeants sat at the bar, and at one of the nearer tables was the new protocol droid, I-5. "There's something you don't see every day," Den thought. On impulse, he pulled up a chair, sat down across from I-5, and raised a by now well-practiced finger to the cantina's tender. "We don't see too many droids in here."
"At these prices, I'm not surprised."
Den's eyebrows went up. This was something unusual. A droid with a sense of humor. The tender brought the reporter his drink, Jorian whiskey. Den sipped it, watching I-5 with interest.
"I heard you were helping Padawan Ophi earlier in the OT.
"True. It was quite an experience."
Den took another sip.
"If you don't mind my saying, you seem rather unusual for a droid. How did you come to be assigned here?"
"I am cast upon the winds of space and time, like a planetesimal spun eternally between suns."
Now Den was shocked.
"Kai Konik, Beach of Stars. You have an impressive knowledge of literature for a droid.
Not really. My memory banks are programmed with more than 200,000 novels, holoplays, poems, and...
I wasn't talking about memory, Den said. I've never met any kind of droid yet who could use the material metaphorically, which is what you were doing.
Silence for another moment. Then the droid emitted something that sounded remarkably like a human sigh.
Oh, at times I wish I were a carbon-based being. The concept of intoxication is attractive.
It has its advantages, Den agreed as he took another drink. You going to tell me why you're in here?
Again, I-5 seemed disinclined to speak at first.
Nostalgia. I used to spend a fair amount of time in establishments much like this one. Places like the Green Glowstone Tavern and the Dewback Inn in the Zykree sector on
Coruscant, Den finished. I know them both well. I'm surprised your master got away with bringing you in with him.
Lorne Pavan wasn't my master. He was my friend.
Your friend?
We were business associates. We traded underworld information, ran some back numbers, brokered the occasional minor government intel, that sort of thing.
Colorful, Den commented. Well, you're a long way from the big city now, as I'm sure you've noticed. Why are...
He broke off, noticing I-5's sudden shifting of attention from him to a group of surgeons who had just entered. Among them was Zan Yant, who carried his katara. The droid, however, seemed a bit nervous.
I'd swear he somehow shows expressions with that metal mug of his, Den thought.
The concept was surprising, but no more so than the idea of a droid having the emotions necessary to produce those expressions. Den's second drink was set down before him, and he lifted it thoughtfully.
So, what motivated you to pack up and leave such a rewarding existence?
I have no idea. Lorne and I were being pursued by...
He seemed to be choosing his words carefully.
An assassin.
A Zabrak, Den said casually.
He watched the droid's face carefully this time. His photoreceptors didn't get bigger, but they did get brighter, which somehow conveyed surprise just as well.
Do I rummage around in your databanks without permission?
Sorry, reporter's instincts. It was obvious that something bothered you about seeing Yant come in, and since I'm assuming you're not a music hater...
Congratulations. The assassin was an Iridonian Zabrak.
I see. Yant's from Tallis, if that makes any difference.
I-5 didn't reply to that.
This assassin stole an item of value from us and fled Coruscant into orbit. Lorne and I were about to go after him, and then, the next thing I knew, I was serving on a spice smuggling freighter.
Huh. Any theories?
I think Lorne deactivated me to keep me out of danger. You see, by then this had turned into something very personal for him. Someone he cared for greatly had sacrificed herself to save us, and...
Sounds like a great story, Den said. Wish I'd been around to write it up.
Trust me. You don't. This assassin was...
I-5 hesitated, then shook his head. Another disturbingly human action.
Black Sun?
Worse. Far worse. Besides, what's a story without an ending?
Every story has an ending.
This one doesn't. Not for me. I don't know what happened to Lorne. I suspect he's dead... But there's no way to know for certain. I've tried to find out, but this all took place more than a decade ago. And routes of inquiry are limited for droids. Even droids that know how to hack past pyro walls and other computer defenses. The entire thing seems to have been completely hushed up at an extremely high level.
Now you're getting me interested, Den said. Nothing like a good conspiracy story. Although they tend to go over better when there's not a war on. I'll see what I can dig up.
Dig too deep on this, and you may be the one who gets buried. I have no idea how I escaped being mind-wiped. All I know is one minute I was at the spaceport on Coruscant, The next, I'm helping feed people's Glitterstim habits across the core systems. According to my interior Crodo, I was deactivated for about 12 standard weeks. I was part of some kind of barter arrangement. I was on the Kessel Run for 6 years. Then the smuggler's ships were raided by a local system's solar patrol. I was confiscated and auctioned to a merchant captain. Why, I'm not certain. There are still large gaps in my databanks I can't account for. Several years' worth, in fact.
He paused.
I really do wish I could get drunk.
Seated at a table in the chow hall, Den Dur was a happy diner. It didn't really have anything to do with what he was about to eat. He was savoring the taste of imminent cold revenge, for soon, very soon now, he would slam the hatch on Philba, that no-creche outling hut. He had just collected another rock for the hut's cairn from an unhappy corporal, and soon he was going to bury Philba like a battle dog does an old bone. The thought made him smile. You do not mess with the press. No way, no how. Especially if you are as crooked as a ranker's back teeth. Most everybody had something to hide, something they wouldn't want to see splashed on the evening holonets. But if you were a thief, it would be something worse, a lot worse. And he'd found it. Philba was going to be flensed and hung out in the hot sunshine to dry. And good riddance. Den chuckled to himself and reapplied his cutlery to the food before him with gusto. Vengeance was the perfect spice for dinner. He looked up and saw Zan Yant leave the serving line, carrying a tray. Den caught the Zabrak's attention and waved him over.
Hey, is that Fleek Eel? He said when he saw the other's plate. I didn't see it on the menu.
No, it's a wriggler, a local species of giant worm, seared in red fruit juice and sprinkled with fried fire gnats.
Sounds tasty.
Well, it's not the Monorai on Coruscant, the sergeant said, but it sure beats field rations. Dur regarded Zan Yant quizzically.
You've eaten at the Monorai?
I wasn't born on this mudball, friend Dur. One of my instructors was a professor at CU School of Music. I went to visit him from time to time.
Still a spendy place for a student.
My family is comfortably well off, Yant said, slicing off a big chunk of worm and popping it into his mouth. Ah, that Charbodian cook really knows its stuff.
Want a bite? Thanks, no, I'm happy with mine.
Den regarded the surgeon with curiosity. A rich medic and an expert musician. Not the sort of person one expected to run into in the galactic hinterlands. Why hadn't he or his family been able to have Yant exempted from the military? Wealth and power had its privileges, everybody knew that. Could it be that Yant had volunteered? If so, Den's respect for him would have to be ratcheted up a notch. Before he could pursue the subject, Yant asked,
And how goes the crusade to keep the public informed?
Good,
Den smiled.
And about to get better.
Ah, a hot story?
Yes, indeed. I can't talk about it yet. Don't want to let the Creel out of the cage, you understand. But I'm pleased with it. I expect it will shake things up quite a bit in certain quarters.
That's good, I suppose.
Yant took another big mouthful of worm, chewed, swallowed, and smiled. Not bad at all. He paused a bit and said,
A question, if you don't mind.
I'm all ears.
I and the other medics here are conscripts.
Left up to us, we'd be a dozen parsecs in any direction away from Drongar. But you're a non-com. You don't have to be out here. You could be reporting off a civilized planet, up to your dew flaps in relative comfort and safety. So why are you here? What calls you to this work?
Den hadn't expected that one. Nobody had asked that particular question in years.
Abruptly, without meaning to, Den found himself telling the truth.
Wars make for big stories, Doc. It's all about the important issues. Life, death, honor, love. It's the raw feed, the mother lode, the crucible. You watch people deep in this kind of fire, trying to get out, trying to get each other out, and you see what they're really made of. Listen, you interview a local politician after a public meeting, and he spins word webs like an educated spinworm, all glossy and shiny, but without any real substance. Sure, he's working to keep his job. He might even be working for the public good and all. Stranger things have happened. But he's not under any real pressure. So he's got time to sort out his lies and make them nice and neat. But you catch a commander whose unit has been shot to bloody pieces with no hope of rescue and enemy fire still incoming? He is going to tell it like he sees it and forget the consequences. War is ugly, my friend. Ugly and painful and cruel. But it strips away the cover. It flenses out truth. And that is what it's all about.
Zan nodded, thoughtfully chewing another bite of his dinner. But you see so much death. Not to mention, you can get killed yourself. Den shrugged.
You see an epidemic of Rojo fever, you see plenty of bodies. And you can get run over by some wethead kid bringing his land speeder to the city for the first time. When your name is called, you go. Doesn't matter where you're standing, does it?
Zan chuckled.
No. No matter where you are, you're always at the head of the line.
At least once a month, Admiral Blade did a tour of the Rimsus. It was a cursory inspection, to wave the flag and pretend he cared about the troops and medics toiling on this tropical mudball he had come to so thoroughly detest. When the next Black Sun agent appeared, it was not Blade's intent that there be anything unusual in his own routine. The inspection tour was scheduled and, without compelling reason to call it off, would proceed as normal, business as usual. It was largely a waste of everybody's time. They knew when he was coming, had had plenty of time to polish and prepare. He would not see anything amiss unless it happened by accident and right in front of him. He couldn't even take time off to go hunting. But then, there was nothing worthy of his skill in this sodden world. Blade always used his personal lighter for the flight to the surface. This jaunt was a piece of dream cake. As he lanced through the atmosphere toward the surface, he was pondering his other problem. Credits. And how best to amass as many as possible as quickly as possible without risk of detection.
Please identify yourself,
came the request from the main Republic ground battery control. Admiral Blade here, he responded. On inspection tour from MedStar 19.
All fine, sir. Proceed the designated landing quadrant and welcome, Admiral.
Blade shut off the comm without responding. The ship's hull began to warm as it arrowed its way into the atmosphere. The sensors noted this and adjusted the environmental control systems. He was only a few minutes away from the ground medical HQ, traditionally called Rimsu 1.
This is landing control. We are assuming command of your vessel in 30 seconds, sir.
Blade nodded to himself. Acknowledged landing control. He would prefer to bring the lighter in himself on manual, but this was not standard procedure, and Tarnese Blade would not risk his future on pure ego-driven matters of such small consequence. Let them land the ship. He had bigger game to slay. Blade liked to vary his inspections. Sometimes he would stick to one planetary sector. Other times, he would travel across an entire region. On one trip, he might visit Rimsus in numerical order. Another time, he'd hit only the even or odd-numbered ones. There were a dozen of the emergency medical bases, one for practically every major battlefront, spread far and wide over Tan Lasso. There was no way he could see them all in a single visit, unless he was willing to stay on the ground for a month of constant travel. Republic Mobile Surgical Units, RIMSUs, were technically able to pick up and move quickly, either to avoid danger or to follow the advance or retreat of the front lines. Once established, however, the units tended to stay put for weeks or months, and some of them were still in the same spot where they'd been initially dropped. As the land speeder ferrying him from the area's temporary hub spaceport approached the current location of Rimsu 7, Blade watched faint speckles of reddish spore dust glitter over the vehicle's transparent steel canopy. The unit was just ahead. They'd covered the 200 or so kilometers of marshland and bayous, separating it from his landing pad quickly.
Rimsu 7, Admiral, sir, the driver said.
Blade nodded. He had been here before, though it had been several months at least. The place looked like all the others. Only the location and the local graffiti marked it as different. Well, that, and the fact that his partner in crime, Philba the Hutt, was based here. They approached the perimeter, were challenged by the guard, and admitted through the energy shield. Blade met Colonel Dark Vides, the commander, and each offered up the usual ordained and meaningless compliments and comments. Going through the motions, Blade was paying somewhat less than half his attention to the tour. Vides ran a tight ship, he knew, and the Admiral would have been surprised to see anything really amiss. It was time. With the Rimsu Admiral planetside for his tour, there would not be a better opportunity, Den knew, to spring his trap for Philba. To see the larcenous Hutt's many crimes finally brought to light. The embezzlement and usury and countless other illegal appropriations that Den had diligently discovered over the past several weeks, both through the HoloNet and by skillful interviews with the staff, all revealed right under Admiral Blade's nose. What could be more fitting or more satisfying? Den leaned back on his form cot and smiled. Payback would be sweet. Over the hypersound speakers came the martial strains of the Republic Anthem's first stanza, the music traditionally played whenever a ranking officer or visiting dignitary was present. Of course, Den was a non-com, so he was not technically obligated to turn out with the others. Still, no harm in showing a little courtesy. He emerged from the tent, blinking, and, as always, slightly astonished at the stifling, sodden heat, and saw the officers, enlistees, and medical personnel lined up for inspection. The clone cohort was separate. Their gleaming black-and-white armored forms, all exactly the same height and body type, standing at attention in rows that, if not perfect, couldn't have been off by more than a millimeter at best. Admiral Blade stood before them. The reporter came to a stop not far from the officer's line. He could see Philba, not exactly hard to miss, looking like something a space slug sneezed out. The best time to drop his bombshell would be during the inspection tour, out of Philba's earshot, obviously. Den tried to visualize the look of dismay on the Hutt's face when security came to collect him. Then he noticed the Admiral pause slightly as he passed the Hutt. There was eye contact between the two, a very quick glance, something that, unless you'd been an investigative reporter with your sensors attuned by years in the field, was virtually unnoticeable. But Den noticed it. Most interesting. It was a lot to read in a single, almost subliminal glance. It might be nothing more than distaste for Hutt in general that had caused Blade's look, but Den Durr was adept at what he did, and he had learned to trust his reporter's instincts. Maker knew they had been hard enough to come by. And the more he thought about it, the more sense it made. The deeper his investigations into Philba's malfeasance had gone, the more obvious it had become that the Hutt couldn't be handling a black market operation like this by himself. He had to be getting help from higher up. Den just hadn't realized how high up the help was. Of a moment, he did a fast revision of his plans. The Admiral dismissed the troops and personnel. Colonel Vides, accompanied by Captains Vondar and Yant, joined Blade to walk him through the operating theater. Sooner or later, Blade would find time to speak to Philba alone, and Den was determined that they wouldn't be as alone as they thought they were. Back in his cubicle, Den pulled a small box from under the bed, thumbed the recognizer lock, and opened it. It was time to bring out the big guns. Or rather, the small ones. The smallest one, in fact. And it wasn't a gun, though it did shoot. Den held the tiny device close to his eyes and admired it. It was a tiny spy cam, disguised as a flying insect known as a moon moth. The entire thing barely covered his thumbnail, but its biomimetic design allowed it to fly about undetected, letting its operator hear and see everything its sensors could pick up, from up to 10,000 meters away.
"Off you go,"
he murmured as he activated the device. The moon moth flew through the open entrance and vanished as Den slipped on the virtual headset that would allow him to control it. He let himself enjoy the feeling of flying for a few moments, climbing high over the base for a panoramic view of the swamp, then swooping down low to buzz one of the many clones in sight. Then he leveled out and headed for Philba's domain. The door was shut, but there were plenty of tiny openings where the heat-warped plastile was joined with the Duraloy framework. He squeezed the moon moth through one. Not a moment too soon. Blade was already there, facing the hut, and from the looks on both their faces, Den didn't expect either one to whip out hollows with the kids anytime soon. He steered the bug cam to a landing on a nearby shelf. Philba had evidently prepared for this confrontation by finishing most of a keg of what looked like Alderanian ale. His skin folds had that rubbery look that huts got when drunk. Blade, on the other hand, was not at all intoxicated, unless anger could be considered an intoxicant. He was speaking in a low-level tone and seemed, to Den at least, ready to slice and dice Philba. Den turned the gain up on the sound enhancers.
"Things are too hot right now. I don't want Black Sun coming back anytime soon. Until this affair with their missing emissary is settled, we have to lie low."
"Easy for you to say,"
the hut rumbled.
"Your profit margin's far higher than mine."
He took another mighty swig of the ale. Despite his distended gut, he was evidently nowhere near capacity.
"I'm taking all the risks, and you're getting all..."
"There'll be no profits for either of us if Black Sun moves in, you bloated imbecile. If you've a brain buried anywhere in all that blubber, you'd understand that."
"Insults,"
Philba sneered, waving his jug about.
"All I ever get. I deserve more for my part in this. I deserve..."
Blade was suddenly across the room and at the hut's throat. He moved so fast that the moon moth had only registered a blur.
"You deserve to have your innards rearranged, you swamp-sucking."
He stopped abruptly. Philba's eyes were even more bulbous and distended than usual. His wide gash of a mouth opened and closed, either questing for air or trying to speak, and apparently not succeeding at either. The small arms were waving about in panic. The jug slipped from his hand and shattered.